All right, folks, welcome back to today's Mountain West Wire podcast. We are talking week 11. Dang it, already week 11 football here. And join our website, mwwire.com. If you've seen our new digs, we appreciate it. I think we're doing a decent job over there in our new little home where you can search by team, by sport, pretty much anything you want. If you want to follow Nevada, Colorado State, Boise, do it. Facebook, same stuff, Mountain West Wire, Twitter, MWC Wire. Joining me today is not Matthew Kennerly, but he was here last time. Brandon Blake, hello.
Hey, hello, hello. Good to be back. Good to be back.
You like that?
Oh, yeah.
All right, so we got week 11 here. Do we need to talk about Twitter etiquette at the beginning, or should we just get into it?
Let's just get into it. We'll pick up as we go along with the Twitter etiquette.
When we get to Boise State CSU, we'll get to that here.
Fun times.
Because those Boise fans, they want to get after it with us.
They're an interesting bunch.
Despite the Broncos being, number one in our power ranking the past 3 weeks, I believe, a couple weeks? Okay. Yeah, we hate Boise, apparently, whatever.
What's the tagline? What is our tagline?
We're biased against your team. But that can be positive. People think that's always negative. That can be good. I can be positively biased against my team. I can be negatively biased. It's either way. People just assume negative.
Context.
All right, let's get to game one. Friday night. Oh, boy. I did not like this one at all. BYU at UNLV. Cougars somehow, honorary Mountain West members, defeat the Rebels 31-21 using a quarterback, not Tanner Mangum, who busted his Achilles versus Fresno, not Bo Hodge, who we saw versus Utah State in a little bit versus Fresno, but this little-known freshman, walk-on freshman, might add you, Joe Critzlow from Franklin, Tennessee, came in and had a reasonably good game and helped beat UNLV. I don't understand it. What happened, Brandon? Do you know?
Well, anything? I can very much attest that one of the best names in the conference, Squally Canada, is what happened to UNLV.
Yeah.
25 carries, 213 yards, one touchdown. He was just phenomenal. He was just phenomenal on Friday night in Vegas. And Critchlow, very efficient. I mean, 14 for 22, 160, one touchdown. Those are the type of numbers that just scream efficiency and also scream very running attack, which also screams BYU actually had an offense.
It's been a while.
I'm a Florida fan, so offense is like foreign to me these last 8 years. So.
So that did that impress you very much? What BYU did, was that like, hey, that's an offense?
Anytime an offense has a functional quarterback and a functional anything on offense, it's like the invention of the wheel, you know. But Squally Canada, I just came away from that game being impressed by him and just BYU's ability to move the ball. Granted, UNLV's defense leaves a whole lot to be desired. I think that was what happened, and just BYU finding an offense. And I was just really surprised that they were able to move the ball on offense where they've struggled all year.
Yeah, because they haven't been able to run. Like, they've been through a lot of running backs. Like, this guy KJ Hall has been hurt a little bit. This freshman Ula Talatau, who got busted for pop possession a couple weeks ago. Obviously, he's not going to be seen in the field anytime soon. They've been like, I look at the rushing numbers, I'm like, okay, how good was it this year, like for this particular game? But like, he's now, he's at Scotland, Canada. Where's he been all year? Like, he had like 40 yards versus, he only had 40 yards versus San Jose State, and they can give up the rushing yards to anybody. It's like, he's been done nothing all year. Like, that 213 yards has basically doubled his output before the year. And I don't think unless I'm wrong, I don't think UNLV's rush defense has been that bad, has it?
It's not been the best, and I'm pulling it up right now, sort of statistically. You keep in mind, UNLV had that lead against the Air Force a few weeks ago, and Utah State. So they've been able. So
and
they
Utah
were,
State,
sort of struggling on the defensive side as a whole, not just run defense. UNLV, I think they're, and this is through, okay, this is through this week's games, they're 10th in the conference in run defense. giving up 227 yards. Yeah, they're third to last. Air Force.
Maybe I'm mistaken.
And San Jose State are also sort of in that bottom third in run defense. So you can run on UNLV this year. And we talked about this a couple weeks ago. And that's the thing that just blows.
But BYU hasn't run at all. That's the thing. BYU has had no running game all year.
Seeing Squally Canada, love that name, just running through. He looked like, Brandon Love, Stanford's running back, Bryce Love. He looked like the second coming Barry Sanders, Emmitt Smith. He just looked like he brought in through UNLV's run defense, air quotes. I'm stunned.
They rushed for one fewer yard in this game versus San Jose State. I get there's some short field stuff, but like, here's BYU's rushing offense. Okay, Portland State 171. Then they played a bunch of good teams like LSU -5, Utah under 100, Wisconsin under 100. They only rushed 66 versus Boise State, 29 versus Mississippi State. East Carolina, who's pretty terrible, only 102 yards. They had 210 versus Utah State, partly because they're getting blown out and stuff, and that happens when, like, oh, game's over, let's just run it. But, like, this game, like, Armani Rogers did not play. They put in Johnny Stanton. Like, Johnny Stanton, okay, yes, two interceptions, terrible, but 325 yards. Lexington Thomas did okay running the ball. They got Devontae Boyd involved with a touchdown. They got Presley involved, Brandon Presley for a touchdown. They had a 50-yarder to, what's his name here, Drew Techman. They moved the ball. It's just, this is all the defense's fault, really. Like, a little bit of the offense when you have two interceptions, but this, I'm not pretending to say UNLV is this vastly superior team to BYU, but the way BYU's been playing, it's terrible because the interceptions led to, it's only 7 points because the one late in the game doesn't really count. It's like the, 1:45 left at the three, just trying to get it downfield, but they punted too many times. They were not able to stop. They went forward on fourth and three at midfield. Didn't get it done. There's too many times where they could not get it done. Too many three and outs. Like, they just interception going. Here's what really hurts them early in the game, real quick. Besides missing a field goal at the beginning, they left 10 points on the board essentially. Field goal and the pick and the interception that led to touchdown. But here's when it really kills them. 15 plays, 79 yards. Get all the way to the BYU 14 interception. BYU turns around, scores a touchdown. It's like those two plays right there. Say it's three right there at 0-0. Let's just say it's 3-0. UNLV, they make the field goal and they kick another field goal. That's 6-0 instead of being down 7-0. That may not have made the difference, but those are big plays where you drive down the field and then just kaput.
It's really the summation of that is UNLV just really shot themselves in the foot Just to sum up their scenario with UNLV, they just had these opportunities and couldn't capitalize on them. And for a team like UNLV that been talking all year, this is the year we're going to get to a bowl. You have to.
They still have a legitimate shot.
But I feel like to be a bowl team, you have to have ideally. A winning record. Winning teams don't do that. You know, winning teams finish drives. Winning teams protect the ball. Winning teams don't let a guy who only had, as you mentioned, only 30, 40 yards run through him like nothing.
Dang. And a quarterback who hasn't played all year.
And a quarterback, you don't let a quarterback, if you have postseason aspirations like UNLV does, you don't let a quarterback. You don't let a guy like Joe Critchlow, no disrespect to him.
Sorry, he played it. He had like 10 passes before the game. Sorry, but very minimal playing time.
You made him turn out to be, you know, this all American signal caller. You know, 14 for 22. You don't let that happen. And yeah,
I mean, good enough. Yeah, come on.
It has to be better. UNLV has to step their game up. In both facets of the ball, especially on the defensive side, just have a little gumption.
Here's a stat for you. BYU wins by 10 points. They went 2 of 10 on third down, and still win this game.
That's that, and
2 of 10.
And
your Rebels were 6 of 14, so it's like, come on, 2 of 10. You can't get points off of that. You can't do anything when they have to give up the ball 8 times.
And also, I think in total yards, UNLV 447, BYU 425, and then also was it? Oh yeah, as much as BYU ran the ball down, you know, down UNLV's, BYU ran the ball down UNLV's throat, the time of possession, BYU only had about like a minute. So it's I mean, what can you say? Just UNLV, just it was a note. Go ahead.
It was just them not, because yeah, all they do is like give Canada 150. Oh, they'd win this game. They also brought in Austin Kefensis, who you're aware of, who's at Nevada for hot seconds, came to play Wildcat, 10 of 53 and a touchdown. It's like they couldn't stop any running game at all. And give credit to BYU. We've seen them a lot this year where it's been pretty terrible. They adjusted their offense enough to give UNLV something to look at that they haven't seen. Maybe that was part of it. New quarterback with Critchlow coming in. Kefensis going to Wildcat, which I think he's only done a handful of times all year. I think he did it once or twice for his Boise State game, but give them some credit for mixing up their offense. But Lexington Thomas should have had a better game. He should have had 100 yards. He had one of his worst games of the year, which isn't bad. 16 for 83, but he also had the 135 long play. Take that away, he basically was stopped the whole night.
Yeah, and Stanton's numbers weren't, you know, were good, just that those two interceptions really did him in. And you're right about Lexington Thomas. Just take away that 35-yard run, you pretty much move 16 carries for, what, 50 yards? That's not going to cut it.
All right, let me ask you this. 2 games left. They go to New Mexico, to Nevada. Are they going to get the 6 wins?
See, I was thinking, just I don't know. I mean, they on paper they should. New Mexico, but here's the thing though. Imagine BYU, you know, BYU was able to run the ball. I know New Mexico hasn't been as good as most of us thought would be this year. You know, New Mexico, one of their strengths is running the ball. UNLV struggles running the ball, and then so it's going to be. I'm going to say yes, even though they get that season finale for the Cannon. That's just going to be points galore. You know, I think they're going to get to 6 wins. I think they could beat New Mexico and beat Nevada. They'll get to 6 wins, but.
At the moment, real quick, they are a 2-point dog to New Mexico this week.
Not surprised, and totally understandable.
And it's a road game, too, so it's we'll see. All right, so let's move on to the next game here. We'll get to, if we're going to go in order here, shoot, I have my basketball page up here. I need to be more organized. When sports overlap, it gets me in trouble with my tabs. I need to have a football-specific Chrome browser up in front of me. Let's do this. We will we'll save this game. Let's go to New Mexico, Texas A&M, because this will be a quick one.
Oh yes, it was bad. Moving on.
Almost. We got, but there's one positive. There was one amazing play in this game, where it was a 100-yard kickoff return for New Mexico when he had Elijah Lilly, 100 yards. He almost had two of those. One was called back to win out of bounds, but he ended up going 5 for 181, 100-yard long touchdown. So congrats to him. But besides that, you mentioned it before just a second ago. The New Mexico running game is not what it was the past couple of years. And it wasn't this game either, because yes, you're playing a better Texas A&M team clearly on the road, but had this been a team last year or the year before, they probably would put up a better fight. But when your offense is predicated on running like they are, they only had 120 yards. And so there's no way they can't pass, because they're not the throwbows anymore. We need to take that away, I think. No more throwbows until you earn it back.
Yeah, and 24 yards passing. I don't care if they were playing Texas A&M or Texas State from a necessary roughness. That's not going to happen. That's not what's popping in these Mountain West streets. We got to retire the throwbows. Complete more than what they end up completing at percentage-wise. Well, under 50% of their passes. Yeah, the running game was non-existent. But, you know, congratulations. You know, they did get that 100-yard return. They did get that return, but it was all A&M today.
Yeah, exactly. And at the half, really quick, we are going to make this quick because there's no reason to discuss too much on this game. So their starting quarterback, Nick Starkle, his stat line, 21 to 30, 416 yards, 4 touchdowns. Let me ask you, Brandon, do you know how much game time he played? No. In this game, how much did he play? Do you happen to know?
I didn't watch the game, but I'm pretty sure he played maybe a...
You're correct. He played the first half.
Ah.
Congratulations. Oh, where's my... Hold on. I don't have my... There you go. I was looking for something else. I'm using a test drive here at Zencaster, but you're correct. One half of football. All right, so let's move on. Real quick, actually, let's take a quick timeout, and then we'll return with San Jose State and Nevada with a special guest. All right, now we're doing things a little bit different this time around. As you know, we got Brandon hopping in for Matt, who's under the weather. But we will bring in now Anna Q to talk about San Jose State taking on Nevada. So in addition to the game a little bit, we're lucky. We got Brandon, does Nevada stuff, Anna, San Jose State stuff. So we'll talk about that game and a little bit about kind of Spartans for the season, which is, unfortunately, 1-10 is not the great. So first off, welcome. First time joining the show.
Hey, Jeremy. Thanks for having me on the show.
So let's get this right away real quick. Spartans are 1-10. That's unfortunate. You went to the university, graduated from university, cover the team. Forget about being covering a team reporter. Give us your real thoughts on the team. Is it this bad that they're 1-10? Is this like the worst it can get that you seem like?
Yes, it has been really bad because they've made history in the Mountain West Conference. They've been there since 2013, and they haven't been this bad until this season.
So what is it like when you're there like every day? Because you're most games you're at, I believe most press conferences. How is the team handling being not good this year? Even though everybody knew, even Coach Brennan came in, there's a reason he came in because the team wasn't doing well, bringing a new coach. How has it been like each week, especially the last couple of weeks with them once conference play's begun? Because they haven't really, for the most part, haven't shown, at least to me, to get that much better week in and week out.
Well, they were enthusiastic at first, but for the past couple of weeks, everyone, including Coach Brennan, and sorry, I'm saying this, Brennan, since he follows me on Twitter, but he sounds like a broken record, just like I do, and he has admitted that in last Monday's press conference as well.
All right, so real quick, because Brandon's on the same side a little bit. Nevada hasn't been very good this year, but...
Yeah.
They've shown some stuff, right, Brandon? They scored some points, whereas San Jose State, it's like they had a couple of good plays versus Utah. They played Fresno reasonably tough for Hawaii, but again, the flip side, this is finally a victory for the Wolfpack.
Yeah, I couldn't believe it. I mean, both teams came in with just one win. Nevada was 1-8 and 1-4 in conference play and entering this game, and I knew like both teams were hungry for a win because their head coach is a first year coach with the team, like just like Brennan. But San Jose State has absolutely no defense besides Frank Yinda.
Mm-hmm. So what are your thoughts, Brandon, of this victory? Because Nevada hasn't been very good, but they just
I felt like it for Nevada it was their most complete game they played all season. They beat Hawaii, but I felt like Hawaii their defense was better in this game against San Jose State than it was against Hawaii. Malik Reed had a fantastic game, and Damian Baber was just all over the place for them. It was a defense that really showed up on Saturday against San Jose State, and the offense. And I mentioned it as well. Jeremy, you mentioned it as well. I think with Nevada, at least they're having an identity in terms of points being scored. They're a very explosive offense, and it kind of goes back to Ty Ganji at the quarterback position. He's really finally gotten a hold of that offense, and it kind of makes you wonder what could have been had they stuck with Ty Kanji. Would they be 2-10? I mean, or excuse me, the record where they are, pretty much. I mean, they still wouldn't be good, but I feel like the offense would come along better had they kept them on. You know, remember that quarterback controversy from earlier in the season? You know, the burning the red shirt of
Kim Kiraton.
Had Ganji at least played all the way through, I think they would have won at least one game. You know, they would have beaten Idaho State. But I feel like they're coming along pretty well. And I said this about Nevada and San Jose State and Fresno, which going into the season, they were the three worst teams in the conference. Their success is not necessarily going to be built on wins and losses. It's going to be how the team performs. And we're seeing, you know, Fresno State, you know, speaks for themselves. Nevada, they're slowly but surely coming along. And San Jose State, you know, they have quite a bit of work to be done there. But Nevada's playing really well.
So, yeah, they've been scoring points like CSU the past couple weeks. They've been giving people Air Force a run for the money each and every week. So when we see Nevada's growth, Anna, have you seen any improvement from this team from the first week where they had a big lead for South Florida compared to now? Because for me, I think the one change is sticking with Montel Aaron, who looks to be the better quarterback. But it's just been like maybe Tyler Nevins. He ran pretty well in this game. He had 100-plus yards. Like, besides Frank Ginda, like, what are the positives offensively where maybe they could steal one more win this year?
Well, Tyler Nevins is definitely a positive. He's a freshman running back. And like, the team has had, like, 9 or 10 freshmen starting in each game so far this season. So I definitely think the youth movement can help this team. But when you brought up Montel Aaron, he did not have good luck yesterday. It was like really bad luck because he had a pass that was intercepted by Baber, and he had two or three more turnovers. Yeah, like two interceptions at the half. And Josh Love came in, and I think he still needs more practice and coaching, by the way. He did not help much, obviously, but at least San Jose State tried with that last-minute touchdown.
Yeah, a little bit. So, like, what's the future for them? Is it just the thing you mentioned, 9 or 10 freshmen? Is this because this game was out of hand? There's too many three and outs for San Jose State. They allowed special teams a block punt for the scoop and score, two pick sixes. That's 21 points right there. And it's not like this Nevada's defense is great. Brandon knows that. That's probably why Nevins had 100 plus yards. It was a decent running game for them. But like, is this something at this point here? We got to be looking forward. So freshman quarterback, freshman running back, Ginda. He's a junior. He may or may not come back. Who knows? It's way too early to speculate. But like, they have some players here, but like, what do you want to see like the next couple of games? They got CSU and Wyoming. Those are two tough teams. Like, is there going to be, what do you want to see in those last two games? Like, what's your kind of idea of what the team should be doing, working on, or like, yeah, what do you want to see happen the final 2 weeks of the year?
Well, they need to stop turning the ball over so much. They need to catch the ball. They need to stop getting themselves into interception situations. They also need to protect the football. Most of all, turnovers cost them games, and that's why they continue to shoot themselves in the foot. They also need to avoid getting penalized like so many times that I can't even remember.
Yikes. All right, so they got those two games left. They're probably going to go 1-12, right? Yeah, 1-12. So when you're seeing, there's not much more to ask, really, to with Spartans, because if we've seen who's good, who's not good, like, do you see any hope going forward? Because I know it's kind of sounds cheeky. Oh, is there hope? They're new coach, young guys. They might probably going to win just one game this year. Is this going to be at one point when you look, say, maybe not next year, but year three, where You have Nevins Jr., you have Aaron's Jr., all these guys coming in they're like, hey, we've been one win teams where we beat nobody. We're finally into year three where we're sitting here at 6, 7, 8, 9 wins. I assume this is a long term play for Coach Brennan.
Yeah, I think there will be a possibility of this team like improving in year three, because don't forget, Coach Brennan is a first time head coach. He has never coached an NCAA team before. And like he said, the youth movement is definitely a good thing, but it's also not a good thing. He stresses this like every week. The youth players, they definitely need to be coached more, because some of them aren't taking the game as seriously as him and other coaches, obviously.
All right, so let me ask a real quick thing about this game. Like, what was Actually, let me go this right here.
You saw three quarterbacks play.
Is there – okay, who's this – I only watched part of this game. I apologize. I can't watch every second of every game.
Oh, it's all good.
Who is this – who's Mike – yeah, Brady. Come on, Brady. You going to give me slack? Watch it. No, I'm kidding. I guess not teased yet, but who's just Michael? Who's just Michael Carrillo, guy who came in for a touchdown pass? Is he in any plans for their future? Anna, there at quarterback.
Don't you mean Michael Carrizosa?
No, it says Carrillo here. Is that not his name?
It says
C A R I L L O Carrillo, right? Or Carrillo? Isn't that the guy? Junior, he had a touchdown pass yesterday. He's Lister's quarterback. If you don't know, it's okay, because I'm just shocked as you are. As this guy comes in and throws a touchdown pass, he's only played in two games all year, so that's not a problem. It's just another guy they're tossing out there for whatever reason, I guess. Right? Is that how it works at this point? When you're 1-10, try whatever sticks on the wall.
Yeah. He is a junior quarterback. For some reason, I blanked out there because I thought you're talking about Michael Carrizosa, the punter. Because he did pretty good yesterday.
I hope so. That's the positive. MVP is the punter, right?
No. Maybe Frank Ginda would be the better option.
I agree. Frank Ginda, I forget, me and Matt discussed this a while ago. I think he's going to potentially break the NCAA single season record, because I think he's sitting at, 16 tackles a game or something? He's sitting at 152. 13.8 per game. Isn't the record isn't 190 or something?
Well, yesterday the radio said he made a tackle early in the first quarter for his 140th.
Okay. What are the record? I know he ended up with 152. We'll look it up later, but I think he's dropped off. He's like an 18 a game. It's like, geez, just do something. Give him some help. Get him some help. That's what they need, right?
Yeah. But this was early in the game, so I think it was 152. I wasn't at the game because I was doing other work, so
okay, it's just a lot of tackles.
I don't have the specific details. That's a lot of tackles.
I think I found it right here. Hold on, season tackles. I'm on Wikipedia. Hopefully that's trustworthy, right, folks? I've career tackles, not season tackle. Okay, here's really quick. Here's what he can do for a season. Most tackles in a season. Texas Tech linebacker Lawrence Flugitz, 193. I don't think Ginda can get. I don't know. I wouldn't put it past him. 41 tackles in two games. Maybe, I don't know. That's pretty tough, right? Okay.
Yes.
Let's champion that. But here's a more realistic option. I'd have to do the math here, but I won't. But 15.92 average tackles per game in a season. 13.8? You can do that, right? Maybe?
Yes. Yes, he headed into the San Jose State at Nevada game with 140 tackles. So I was right.
Yeah, so yeah, he had a dip. Hawaii and BYU only 9 each, so get together, Frank.
Yeah, he's the first FBF player this season to be credited with 100 tackles.
He is
the national leader in total tackles and tackles per game, and shares the national lead in unassisted tackles.
That's right, solo tackles 82, and then assisted tackles he's only number 3, unfortunately. But hey, I'd rather have solo tackles than assisted, right? That's way better. I mean, he's getting the job done himself. Yeah. All right, before we wrap,
yeah, he averages 14 per game.
All right, before we wrap this section up here with you, Ann, any last words you want to talk about San Jose State? Anything we should know that we never talk about with the Spartans?
Yeah, like yesterday it was announced that former San Jose State Spartan Shane Smith made the main roster in New York. So congrats to him.
Excellent. So it's some good news. And I want to get, is B'nai B'nwikari back in the NFL? I know he's with the Panthers, but got cut recently.
Can you repeat the question you were cutting out?
B'nai B'nwikari, is he back with the Panthers or something? I know he's played a couple years with somebody. If not, it's whatever. I just remember that name because it's such a... Yeah. I just remember that because it's a name I can say and he's pretty good. So I'm going to take it.
Yeah, like, I haven't seen anything on him, to be honest. Okay. And there are, like, a lot of other players from San Jose State who have made it to the NFL. Because at the Simpkins Stadium Center, they literally have a sign with, like, each team. And there's, like, a list of guys underneath each team.
I know Tyler Evans is with my Texans, so hopefully he gets some play eventually. But I don't know. All right, so... that's his
point. Good guy.
Oh, he is. I'm hoping they drafted. Who is it? Dante Foreman from UT from Texas. So he may took some carries, but hopefully long play he gets in there because he was amazing to watch with special teams, passing game. He just tore it up here at the Spartans. But Anna, thanks for hopping on with us for this portion of the podcast. And yeah, we'll just follow Anna on Twitter. It's Anna K I E U Anna Q. So give her a follow for Spartan stuff. If you like hockey, she does some hockey stuff for the Sharks. Anything else you typically do? What else you got going?
Yeah, I also do soccer, basketball. Yeah, and basically like everything else because I also fill in. The last game I went to was Stanford versus number 9 Washington. I still can't believe that they stunned them in that 30-22 win.
Crazy one to say. So basically, Bay Area stuff, give Anna a follow. And so thanks for hopping on. And me and Brandon, we will continue going on. So thanks for joining us, Anna.
No problem, Jeremy. Thanks for having me on the show, guys.
All right. Once again, let's thank Anna Q for joining us for that. Let's move on to the next game. So while I'm in Air Force, I think we need to discuss the injury that happened at the beginning during this game. You're aware of the Josh Allen information, correct?
Yes.
Coach Bull did not mention what happened to postgame, even though being asked. Josh Allen was not available, which makes sense because he played a half. However, if you're a student watching the game, his right hand never left his pouch pocket. So assuming it's some sort of right hand injury. So if you're going to hide an injury and it's a hand injury, stick both hands in there. Come on, do something where we can't figure it out, right?
Yeah, just be a little bit more discreet.
Yeah, discreet, exactly. And so it's like, well... He played. He they won, which is good. And give credit again to the best. I'll say it. The best. I don't care, Boise State fans. The best defense is the Wyoming Cowboys in the conference. Yes. Utah State's doing quite well with the amount of turnovers they force, but they cough it up too much to have a good enough turnover margin. But three turnovers led to points in this game. He had an interception and two fumbles, I want to say. Is that right? Yeah, two lost fumbles.
Yeah, two fumbles.
And Wyoming sort of found a running game. Sort of? Kind of? Yeah. No, we can still say no.
No. They ran for a total of 100 yards rushing.
How many attempts, though? Come on, 43 attempts.
43 attempts. Trey Woods had 11 carries for 47 yards. Yeah, they don't have a running attack.
Thank you. Would you trade this running game for a Florida has?
Moving on.
I think that no comment might be a yes, maybe a soft yes. That's okay. But this matchup here, again, the Cowboys defense, like they made Worthen throw because he did pretty well for throwing 10-22. Now, what you really want from the Air Force QB, a pick, like I mentioned, 175 under 50%. But they held like Taven Berto. Who are these guys? Jacob Stafford. These are guys we don't hear much this year. McVay had 33 yards. They didn't give it to Parker Wilson, who I might be nicked up. I believe they're fullback, but 200 yards for Air Force is really like 100 yards for anybody else.
Yeah, not a. I mean, 200 yards, 203 might be great for, like he's mentioned, you know, other schools, but yeah, 203 for Air Force is kind of ho hum. They did have to make Wortham throw, and when he tries to throw, see when they played Nevada, even though they did win, it's no great shakes. But I mean, credit Wyoming's defense for forcing Air Force to find a passing game. Air Force has a defense. They don't have much of a running game, but they do have a defense. Not much of an offense either. Josh Allen injury, 8 for 11. Percentage wise is fine. A touchdown, but
touchdown. That was a sweet. That's a slick touchdown pass. The one to was it Jared Scott? They had that nice 38-yard. Well, it wasn't Woods, but the Scott one right across the middle. That was a very good looking throw. But defense. Yes, yeah, I can count him on one hand.
Yeah, it was one of his better throws of the season. But the defense is, yes. I think you and me and a couple other people probably had better throws than Josh Allen this season. But anyway, moving on. They do have their calling card is defense, Wyoming, and they leaned on that tonight. Leaned on it last night to shut down a very potent Air Force attack.
And
keep pace with boys. We'll get to that in a moment. Mm-hmm. But almost. But to try to keep pace. And this team offensively isn't that great. But they can fall back on their defense.
All right. So with Wyoming here, they're sitting at 7-3. Because what are you gonna make of this game? Air Force. They have two games left. There could be still eight teams going bowling. I don't know. They've beaten Boise a couple times in a row. They got them next week, then Utah State. So there's a sort of a chance, but let's talk about Wyoming real quick. I'm trying to look up right now the latest, go to Trib.com and Brandon Foster, or whatever, they do stuff like that for the Cowboys. So what does it mean to you that if Allen, because if it's a hand, right hand, broken metatarsal, could be a sprained thumb or something. Who knows? If he doesn't play, where do you think how does that face for Wyoming? Because they play Fresno State next week at home.
If Allen isn't at 100%, then Wyoming's offense isn't really in a world of trouble. I mean,
does it matter?
I'm of the mindset that you can have a great defense, but if your offense can't be functional, then then your defense is compromised. And Fresno has a good more than been able to move the ball. And if they don't have Josh Allen's services, even as the mere threat of Josh Allen, real or otherwise, real imaginative or otherwise, can at least keep Fresno's defense somewhat honest. But if he's not there, if he's not playing, or if he's under 100%, then it's grim.
I have sort of an update on this game, on his injury. Just like I said, just moments ago over at Trib.com for Brandon Foster. Because he said he put his hand in there, so I figured, okay, that's a hand injury. May not be the case. Because part of his article says Craig Willis tight-lipped on Allen's upper body injury after the game. So if he has his hand in the little QB pocket, maybe he's using that sort of as a sling because he has broken his collarbone in the past. So I'm just speculating here based off of what information we have. He did take a hard hit early in the game on that double pass. And so maybe collarbone issues, AC joint thing. Regardless, if it's the right side, if it's collarbone, he's done. Because if it's a broken collarbone, he probably can hang on the sideline. But I don't think it's that because he's pretty active yelling around, walking around, doing stuff. So I doubt it's that. So I'm wondering maybe he just I doubt it's a dislocated shoulder. Maybe it's an AC sprain or something up there, rotator cuff thing. Or it still could be a hand thing. Who knows? So speculative him running around out there. I doubt it's an extremely severe injury. We'll know more. Craig Bull said we know more Monday, which is tomorrow, or maybe today when you're listening. But I don't want to guess, but I don't know. Hand or shoulder is what makes sense to me after hearing that. And probably not super severe, because if it was a broken thing, they'd gone to the x-ray or go to the locker room for x-ray or ambulance or to come out or something. So I doubt it's something like that. I don't think it's a broken bone in his body. I think that would make sense, because if it broke his hand, broke a thumb or something, or tore a ligament in his fingers, he would have been gone. He wouldn't have stayed in the game dressed.
Yeah, it reading that report, it doesn't sound that serious. Maybe you just hold him out for a practice or two, just precautionary, and then just Yeah.
Man.
That's interesting. Better safe than sorry. You know, just.
Because it was a close game, too. So it's why would you hold, like, I don't think precautionary, but it is a close game. So I don't think you'd hold him out because, oh, it's a close game. But it's bad enough for him to miss half the game. So that's where I'm thinking it's, like, maybe a shoulder thing.
Right. Just, we'll know more Monday. But, like, it doesn't sound serious. We could agree that, as it stands right now, barring something weird in the distance, he's playing next week. But now on Saturday, right?
I would say, probably questionable.
He'll be listed as questionable.
Yeah, that's what I figured at the moment. Like, yeah, we'll figure it out. We'll know more Monday. Just going through each little bit, like, okay, he stayed in the field. His right hand didn't leave his pocket. So, okay, right hand injury, right arm injury. He had a history of broken collarbone, which took him out of his freshman year, I believe, a couple years ago, where he started like one or two games. So it's serious enough to leave the game, but not serious enough to get checked out during the game. So we'll see. But let's move on to the next game here. Let's just go to the, we'll save this game for last year. Let's go to Fresno State, Hawaii, which I'm thankful for the Watch Stadium app to finally be working on Android. So props for that, guys. There was a lightning delay, so this game was late. Even though it started an hour earlier than normal, it was still a late football game. But you had Fresno State win, 31-21. Marcus McMarion had almost his most touchdowns of the year, nearly his best game. He had two picks, but they let him throw the ball, probably more than he should have because under 50%. But Fresno won 31-10, partly because of that huge second quarter where they go after being down 7-0, they scored 21 unanswered points. Actually, 31 unanswered points, and that was pretty much the ball game. Because Hawaii's defense, as we know, is, well, not very good.
No, it's not. And very charitable defense this year. More so than, well, probably one of the more, like I said, one of the more charitable defenses in the league, not named, you know, San Jose State. But, yeah, McMarion threw the ball quite a bit than I would have preferred. They only ran the ball. But you have to balance, though. They threw 36 times. They ran the ball 36 times. Not a lot of yardage, though. Mims only had 55 yards. Ronnie Rivers only had 53. So, but they were able to move through the air. And then you can do that against a defense like Hawaii's. Well, they were able to do that.
Sorry for my chuckle. I apologize for my chuckle. I'm going to get to this tweet momentarily in the next game because it's pure gold. But we'll keep talking about this one for a minute here. One thing I did like about Hawaii, they got Dyson May St. Juiced. He actually became one of the – I need to look at more specifically, but he rushed for more than 100 yards against his Fresno State defense, which held, as we know, Donald Pumphrey – or not Donald Pumphrey, Jesus, last year. Excuse me. Apologies to Aztec fans. Rashard Penny, Jesus, drawing a blank there for some reason. 53 yards a couple weeks ago. And so they've been holding opposing players. Like, this is not the best rushing defense, which is weird because they're actually near the top in yards per game allowed. But when you look at it a bit more deeper, like per game basis, they've been giving up 3 yards per carry, 2.9 yards per carry. Like the past couple games, past six games, just over 173 yards is the most they've given up versus UNLV. For a single player, I think St. Juice was the highest in a while. Outside of that Alabama game, they've been just kind of skewing their stats by a lot. But like 60 yards versus Nevada, 90 versus Washington, 109 versus New Mexico. And so with one player like St. Juice, like BYU had 122. But when you go by per player, St. Juice, I believe, is one of the best outside of Alabama. I think it's probably Jalen Hurts who did all that damage, rushed 400 yards, which is nice. But then again, no touchdowns. Drew Brown had a couple touchdowns, but had a pick as well. And like, Hawaii should have been better suited for this game because, clearly, first off, they're at home, which is a big deal. They forced interceptions, but here's the thing. It all came in the second half. One of the interceptions was a pick six, and then two, I guess maybe not too late in the game, were back-to-back interceptions, which really didn't impact too much. But when there was 6 minutes left in the game, Hawaii got the ball back on an interception. They started driving down the field, then they gave it up their own on second and goal at the five, an interception. And so it may come back, may not have been the works, but when you have that late in the game interception, that could be 7 points there. You have a fumble that goes for a touchdown against you. You have multiple three and outs in the first half. Like, outside of their touchdown play in the first half, they had three three and outs, four drives where they had six plays or less. So they couldn't move the ball. And then you go into the third quarter really quick. They get the ball back. A chance to make some noise, move down the field. Fourth and seven, they're too far for a field goal, give it up. And then Fresno, that's kind of where the game changes. 21-7 at that point. They're in the game, obviously. Fresno gets a field goal after the turnover on downs. Hawaii fumbles, leads to a touchdown. So a really quick 10 points and poof, game over.
Game over. Yeah, it just goes back to with Hawaii just been very inconsistent this year. They normally have their moments where they really shine, and then they have their moments where they just really makes you scratch your head and think, what are they doing? And St. Juice really, going back to St. Juice, he really did have a fantastic game. One of the stars on that Hawaii squad. It's just, you would think last year, going to last year, Hawaii would build on their just incredible turnaround, but they've just really been inconsistent, especially on the defensive side. And you mentioned they had a chance to get back into that game and then just fell flat, and Fresno took advantage of that. And credit Fresno State for really jumping on them earlier and then not letting Hawaii get up, mostly because Hawaii fell on their face.
And part of it too, Hawaii's still missing. I'm going blank at everybody's name. John Osrua there. Jeez, I'm going terrible tonight. But missing him is huge. And so there's still, like me and Matt discussed this each of the past couple weeks. They're still not finding. Yeah, Dylan Colley's nice, but nobody's going 15-yard, 20-yard average, 200 yards total in receiving game. And so they miss that threat, and he's with that threat makes St. Juice that much more valuable. But with St. Juice knowing they're going to run the ball to him, knowing the downfield player, the playmaking ability of Ursua is not there, that's a concern. But I'll give you one positive, Hawaii fans. One positive. I guess two. We got St. Juice, but I would have to look back a bit more to the history of the season's games. But Hawaii had fewer penalties and penalty yards in Fresno State, only 36 penalties.
Yeah.
So congratulations for that, right?
Even though they took the loss, they can build on that by not, in terms of the penalties being cut down. They just have to work on everything else. But yeah, exactly. But good for them on getting those penalties turned down. I mean, they had to have something go right.
Exactly. All right, so here we go. Best game of the weekend, 59-52, Boise State over Colorado State. I did see very early on 28-3 jokes, which apparently came true very early on, which I'm over that, but whatever. If that's your thing still, like 4-8 Notre Dame, go for it, right?
Like the 28-3 jokes, I sort of think we need to retire those as a collective.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The first guy I saw was from some nobody. I'm like, oh, that's clever, cool. But then I noticed other people started bringing it up, like, okay, whatever. Here's the thing. CSU had not one 25-point leads, but two 25-point leads in this game. This was had the making of a blowout. They were up 35-10 at one point, and Boise State had literally nothing they could do to stop what the Rams were doing. The biggest thing in this game, really, before I get all that, was Izzy Matthews injured, did not play, which hurt the Rams later in this game, but like the start of the game, Rams, boom, good on touchdown, field goal, touchdown, fumble for Boise, touchdown, punt for Boise. Like, here's Boise's first three possessions. Field goal, fumble, punt. Rams, touchdown, 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 touchdown. And so they scored a touchdown. Here's what's amazing about this game. The Rams scored a touchdown on every possession except for one in the first half. And they're up 35-17. So that's how that. So here, the way this game really changed, like how it really turned, Rams are doing their thing. Boise gets the ball. They're down 35-10. Then you have an amazing Alexander Madison gets a touchdown, 35-17. Okay, whatever. Rams have to punt. Boise gets the ball in the first half, or first play of the second half, I should say. Excuse me. Okay, 35-17. All right, game's still. Okay, it's not very good right now. Boise's still. And a lot of hurt. Here comes Madison doing another hurdle off the line of scrimmage. 70-yard TD run, 35-24. And then the wheels really fall off. An interception by Nick Stevens, then a touchdown for Boise State, 35-31. This game was nuts, and I watched too many times. Boise State, this honestly, I don't care if you watched or not. Did you watch a good amount of this game, or what did you see?
I was flipping back between that and
Notre Dame Massacre.
That, and I had like three screens on. I saw the beatdown Miami put on Notre Dame, this game, and I think it was another, UNT.
Alabama?
No, not Alabama. Either that one or Oklahoma TCU. It was one of those. I had like three TVs. I was watching four games. This one was one of them.
As you should.
It's
I watched most of this game this morning because I just was exhausted for some reason and fell asleep before it ended. I'm like, which is shame on me, but I had it recorded, so I watched it this morning because I could speed through and get to it all. Because when I saw the score, I'm like, oh crap, I got to see what happened in this game. So Nick Stevens was very inaccurate in this game. He had, and let me get back to my original point before I mentioned that. There was the interception pick six from Boise State nullified for roughing the passer. Then I forget when this was, third quarter, I think. Wide open, nothing but green field in front of him. Boise DB, the reason he plays defense, folks, doesn't catch the ball, kind of bobbles it, had nothing but space in front of him. Two or three guys next to him on his team would have been a convoy for a touchdown. Huge missed opportunities for Boise State. Didn't matter that they won by four, ended up winning, but this game could have been a blowout and not even gone to overtime. So there's that, but like, Rams had their defense. We know their defense has been skeptical, not very good. But the rushing defense has been okay. But Alexander Mattison had his biggest game of the year, 242, three touchdowns, along 70. There was no stopping this Boise offense. This is the team we thought we'd see all year long. It just took them
10 games.
Six weeks to get here.
Yeah, it took them about roughly half the season for the Boise State offense we all know and we're accustomed to find itself, to find their play their best game. Madison was just phenomenal last night.
Good Brett Rippon.
And here's the thing. Rippon played for, if I'm not mistaken, most of that game. I mean, 43 attempts.
They finally!
Had to split time with Kogar and with some weird little, quarterback thing. He played...
Maybe eight plays. Eight plays, I think it was. He had seven rushing plays, and Kozar had one pass. So it's like, are they finally listening to me? It's like, Brett Rippon needs to be the guy out there. They figured out their groove, what they're doing. Right. When he gets to red zone, get Kozar in there. But he played the majority of the game. This is a quarterback who should be top three in the conference by far. But with him splitting time and him having bad games, he's not. But this game proves he is just as good, if not better, than Nick Stevens. These were the two best quarterbacks in the conference, and they both showed it this game. But both teams ran. Here's the thing, though. When you look at the total pure numbers, both teams did well. Dalen Dawkins, 161, two touchdowns. Redshirt freshman Body had 84 yards, two touchdowns. Madison, clearly 242. But like Michael Gallup had 11 for 102. Cedric Wilson, had that left shoulder injury in the game, still had 73 yards. Tight end Jake Gross showed up with another touchdown, two touchdowns. Couple turnovers in this game, but the big thing in this game was Rams got up to the big lead and just blew it. Their defense let them down in this game. That's all you could say about it. Offense, they had a few, let me double check here in the second half. They didn't score in every possession because Boise's defense had an interception. But even then, if you look at this way really quick, he had the interception in the first possession, and there were a lot of bad throws by Nick Stevens. He had a lot of overthrows, underthrows. He was not very good overall.
Yeah, the numbers were good. His numbers were good. No knock on. We're not saying Nick Stevens had a horrible game. Oh, he was horrible. He had a very good game. Yeah, I think the 43 attempts, 29. You're right. He did miss a couple. There was a couple of throws. Like, what is he doing? He played well. Just a lot of those throws were kind of like left you scratching your head.
And then at end of the game, like, here's how it turned out. So. Crazy, crazy end of the game here. So, interception. Who threw this pick here? Sorry, I'm trying to get this up correctly. Yeah, Jordan Fogle got a pick. So, it's 45-38. Rams are up. They get a touchdown. They're up 52-38 with 3 minutes left in the game. You got to think it's over. Rams are going to finally beat Boise for the first time ever. Not so fast. They go on a 10 plays. This is really a 10-play drive. 74 seconds in 10 plays. Touchdown. And then you bring out the hands unit. Cedric Wilson gets an amazing onside kick recovery. They go down and score again, 45 yards out. Rams have to punt, overtime. And then what do they do? Give it to Madison. Game over, essentially. This is a game. You got to watch these games. Come on, people. This. I'd have to double check, but this might have been the best game of the whole day overall, I think.
Yeah. I mean, I think, hands down, it was the best Mountain West game.
Oh,
easy. We can make the argument as far of the late games, unless you want to see Alabama, Mississippi State, and who would. This was probably one of the better games out west last night.
Yeah, when you look at like the blowout, Auburn crushed Georgia. Alabama, Mississippi State was pretty good late.
Yeah,
because how they came back. But like overall, like Miami crushed Notre Dame. TCU, Oklahoma, pretty good, but still an 18-point victory. But the way this game played out, I would argue this was the best game of the whole day. Maybe Oklahoma State, Iowa State would be right there with it, 49-42.
Oh, yeah.
That's probably the only other game I'd stick in that mix. But and then, this is a game. It's like, geez, Boise, where were you? You'd be at UCF, man. Maybe I'm bitter at Cozart. He had that stupid shovel pass for a pick six against Wazoo. I'm like, seriously, had they had one loss, if they're sitting here at 9-1, they'd probably be ranked ahead of South Florida and be about a 20-22 ranked team in the country. They still wouldn't be near UCF, who's what, 13 now, 14, depending what poll you're looking at, 12 in the coaches.
I think
they're
12.
They'd probably be, they'd be right around top 20 team. And they're still, I don't get how NC State's still ranked, West Virginia's still ranked, Michigan State's still ranked. Jeez. Boise State should be ranked at this point. People aren't watching games. If they're getting only 6 points, they're better than Arizona. They're better than Northwestern. They're better than Virginia Tech.
Yeah, it's I think it's
boo.
For Boise, I think it's a, I don't want to say it's Boise, it's, I don't think it's Boise BT. I think because Boise started so up and down or sort of inconsistent beginning of the year. I mean, they went into Pullman and Washington State took care of them, handled them. They played very poorly. And then they played Virginia. And correct me if I'm wrong, Virginia went into Boise and handled them. Nobody's done that. So Boise sort of started behind, a little bit behind on the eight ball, and plays we mentioned offensively, they just hadn't got it going. They could run the ball and play defense, though, although the last night's game, defense was optional. Had they not had those losses, you're right. I think they would be, of the group of five teams, they would be high. I think they would be right there with Central Florida, if not ranked higher. I'm drawing up, Central Florida, I don't think they've played. I have to pull up their schedule. I don't think they played much.
That's actually pretty good. Actually, if you look at it real quick, like there's something with Wisconsin. Like, oh, what's going on with this? Like, their actual resume is better than Wisconsin. And so, UCF. I mean, UCF. Yeah.
Boise's? What's it for? Central Florida's. Oh. But Central Florida, didn't they? And again, correct, stop me if I'm wrong. I believe they had a game against, scheduled to play Georgia Tech, but they canceled because of one of the storms.
Correct. I'm looking right now. I pull up right now. 9-0. Yeah, Memphis was canceled but rescheduled. They also has Maine and Georgia Tech, so they've had two games canceled. They only have two games left. They'll have 11 games, so they're going to play 13 games? Wait, that can't be right. Hold on a second here, because Georgia Tech
canceled.
Maine canceled. Is Maine rescheduled?
I haven't heard anything of a reschedule.
I know Florida State's trying to schedule somebody late.
Yeah, Louisiana Monroe, which. Yeah.
I'm not sure. Just look at the schedule. But yeah, Georgia Tech, they're okay. That would have been a good win for them. But even without them on the schedule, they're comparing, like, because they beat Maryland and Memphis is pretty good. Navy's done all right, but I think the way, and people weren't saying that they should be ahead of Wisconsin, but they say the gap or any perceived gap, the UCF should be much closer than what they were last year in the playoff.
And I think with Central Florida, I think it's a push between Wisconsin and Central Florida. I think folks will probably give Wisconsin the edge because they beat Iowa, who bumped Ohio State last week, 2 weeks ago. But yeah, Boise, like you said, give them one loss, just the Washington State loss. They'd probably be the best. We'd be talking about them being, hey, they're the best one loss team, you know, in of the group of five. And you might have a few hot takes popping off saying, well, their schedule is better than Central Florida's. You know, all for the clicks.
Sorry, I'm reading. All right, okay, we're done here. We're going to Twitter stuff from Boise State fans.
Oh, yes.
You ready for this? All right, so we know we playfully joke, and some people maybe take it more serious than they should. And yeah, sometimes we have some messages we respond with that. Not that they're questionable, but maybe we shouldn't have done, but they're still not right. Out of bounds by any stretch, by any measure, anywhere. And
yeah,
and truth hurts, right? Sometimes truth hurts. So here's a couple of tweets I'm going to go through because a couple just popped up now again. And it's fun. So this guy, Elliot Hoyt, whoever he is, he's some dude on Twitter. So there, Barstool has all those random school sites, like whatever. I don't care about them. They're garbage, I think. I'll say it. They're terrible. I've seen a couple funny things from them, but few and far between, that are funny without being offensive, which is very minimal. So because they pop up on my timeline for people retweeting. I'm like, oh, geez. Or, hey, that was funny. But usually not the case. So there's a tweet. There's something about, oh, with Boise State losing early in this game, CSU, there's something from their CSU account, like, oh, they did this, blah, blah, blah. And I don't even like reading what this guy mentioned here because it's so crude. It's not no swearing, but it's like just all sorts of garbage and stuff and whatever. So, and we retweet, and I'll say it was Matt Kendall who tweeted it. He's like, should I go further? I'm like, go for it, man. Do what you want to do. And so he retweets, he's basically saying, El Hoyt guy's like, oh, thanks for the welcome, whatever, CSU accounts. Blah, blah, blah. I did this to this to this to you and you and left to flip the finger on the way out for victory. I'm like, okay, whatever. We retweet with facts, not mind you. Broncos have exactly one outright Mountain West title. Simmer down now. Which is true. Which,
yeah. I mean, funny because it's true.
Response. And there's a bunch of others, but I like this thread the best. That guy replies back, shut up. Okay, cool, whatever. Let's go to fourth grade. And then this Utah State guy chimes in, U State 5, who gives us a hard time too, so it's fair. He goes, hey, be nice, Elliot. He's fine. And then he goes back. I know this is boring, but I think it's funny because you'll laugh, and I know how it's a humor bit. And then this guy, Elliot, responds back, fragile like Utah State's defense? And a little laughing, crying emoji. And then the great response is about how Utah State's doing pretty good turnover margin-wise. And so... he goes, did you beat Boise State? I'm like, okay, whatever. That's fair, true. That's truth, right?
I can't find the lie.
And then there's some other stuff about what type of car do we drive? And somebody else, some other thread, or we bring in stats. He changes the subject every time, every response. But this particular thread goes through again. This guy, Utah State fan, hey, you need to get some rest. The used car dealership opens early. Parentheses, you needed a booster favor to get that job. And then one last response a few minutes ago, and I don't care if people don't care about this. I think it's funny, so I'm going with it. This is our podcast, and I can make jokes for once.
Hey,
right? Come on, we can have fun, right? We're not serious.
Hey, no, I mean, look, man, the world's hard enough as it is. You got to have some fun, you know. Otherwise, it's just more. Otherwise, it's just everybody's tight.
You see these coming through? You see the last one?
Yeah.
You want to read it?
And I think Anna probably mentioned this during our conversation earlier in
pre-show.
Yeah, it's a game. It's just, you could scream, hoot, holler, get mad, but just it's a game, and you're a fan or an alumni or alum.
Here's why I don't get about the final tweet. Okay. I'll read it here. He goes, I work for a premier Porsche dealership in Boise, mind you, Boise, Idaho. Let me double check. I don't want to misinterpret this guy, but I'm pretty sure. Yes, he's in Boise. Let's go to his Facebook page too. See what he's done.
Let's find out.
He is, because it says Boise. So here's what doesn't make sense to me. Okay, you work for a premier. There's a lot of Porsche dealerships out there, even in smaller. Boise is not a big town, clearly. But then he goes on to say, I'm one of the top 15 consultants in the nation. So do you sell cars or do you consult cars? What does that mean? And odds of you be, if you're, you're not, there's no way, no way you're a top 15 guy. And another response, yes, but for somebody else, but like, there's no way you're in a market the size of Boise and that much of a salesman. He might be good. I'm not doubting that, but does he live in like where more affluent areas, like say Southern California, large cities that, you know what I mean? It's like, come on, but come on,
yeah,
buddy.
Seattle, yeah, like, you know, like Seattle or Portland, you know, something that, you know, larger,
even bigger, LA, San Diego. Yeah. It's like, come on. Houston, like, there's a lot of large cities out there. Dallas, I'm just saying.
Jacksonville.
It's like, there's no way.
Atlanta.
Maybe, right? Yeah. Chicago? Come on.
Walla Walla, Washington. You know.
Okay, I'm not going to mention this guy's response, the Utah State guy, but you can find it. Go to our MWC Wire account. And we did make one joke, which he goes, what are you going to do, sell us a certified owned pre-Lexus or whatever?
Hey.
Like, if you're gonna try to disrespect the job, get the right brand. I'm like, dude, come on. It's like, have some fun. Twitter's supposed to be fun, right?
Supposed to be, you know, if it's not run by, you know, turds. It's the turds that make it unfun, Jerry. Keep that in mind. You ever see me fighting or even holler? It's the idiots that make Twitter unfun. We're just here popping off jokes.
Yeah. It's, I don't care. I can respect what he does. He has a good job. I'm on his Facebook page. He did deliver a car to Park City. So I guess technically if his base is in Park City, which is a pretty affluent area, it's like, okay, that's not too far from Boise, but still it's like, come on, dude, like whatever. We have some fun, relax. It's, right. It's like, you could go back and forth and not be a right, jerk about it.
It's just, you know, I felt the beginning of the season, I had a interesting exchange with a couple of UNLV fans. Well, a few UNLV fans, because I think you mentioned something about them not having a good, needing their defense to be exceptional for them to be bowl eligible. And that was fine. You know, no harm done. Now, I ran into some UNLV fans that could be, you know, a little off there, a little off. But, you know, the exchange with them was fine. You know, that I'd rather have more of those exchanges that I had at the beginning of the season. We were just, you know, talking stuff.
It's just, it's like, I don't know. It's like, we don't get into it with a lot of people, but when some people just dig in and like, I don't know. It's, I know we shouldn't do this all the time, but today there's another, we won't get into this other example. You can find us on MWC Wire. Check out a couple of New Mexico basketball tweets I sent out myself, one by Eli, but it's a game. Come on. It's, I know there's a lot of jerks on Twitter, and there's a lot of jerks on Twitter, but we're not going to get into that because you and me probably know both know what they are. We're going to get mad if we keep going down this hole about what we're going to discuss, but have some fun. It's like, relax. It's like, you could be like, our conversation technically was pretty civil. Yeah. There's one part, like the car thing, like whatever, but other people coming in are saying dumb stuff. But I just find it hilarious. His one comment is shut up. His response to saying you have one outright title is to shut up. Right? It's like, that's like fourth grade stuff.
Just don't be so tight.
It's fun.
Don't be so angry.
Saying that, follow us on Hey, if you want some of this fun stuff, go to MWC Wire on Twitter and follow us.
Yes, we appreciate likes, saying that, retweets, and great conversations. And
I also, hey, if you're mean to us, we don't care. We're fine. We're cool with it. We may respond to you. We may not. Like, I've been getting better at not responding to some stuff like this. I said better sometimes.
You're a much better soul than I am.
I'm trying. One last.
There's certain things you could just let go, like, whatever. But there's just certain things, like, if they just come incorrect, it's like, let me just put it away, or let me just, you know, correct them on it. It's really hard.
I hear you sometimes. But, like we said, we are biased against your team. We have fun with it. And honestly, we don't want to get into fights, everybody. We don't very often. But if you're going to come after us and say, why are you just disrespecting our entire season after one exhibition game or one preseason game? I'll respond. It was a one preseason game, and you played what level of team? Because I had some guy on Twitter like, like Utah State lost to Weber State in basketball. I'm like, dang it. Some guy replied to us like, oh, that stinks or whatever. I'm like, well, I replied back, hey, at least they played a D1 team.
Yeah.
Which is true. Boise State played like Oregon Tech or something. And so I'm like, that's a quip response. That's a fun response. Then they get all defensive and say, what do you have against me? What are they? I'm like, nothing. You started it with me. I responded saying, hey, at least they scheduled a real opponent today.
Yeah, and to point to your example, you know, about not taking things so seriously. Yeah, I'm a Florida fan, and our season, the football season, has been no great shakes. It's been a dumpster fire. But sort of at the end of the day, you kind of let your frustration out, and you just move on. You know, you just they're better than us. It sucks, but you just let it go. And don't take it so seriously. Just relax, you know.
All right. I think we've done enough on this as well. One last note, actually. I like it when people say they're unfollowing us, but they never do, or they follow us back a month later.
I love that. That's just the whole Twitter thing. Like you get, you know, bigger accounts, like one, for example, like Andy Staples, he's for SI. You know, I think he was going back and forth with someone. Mm-hmm. He says, I'm unfollowing you. But it's like... Oh wow! You know, just sweet. You cool. know, bye.
Sorry,
I'm gonna let everybody like, know.
You followed me. You followed me. I didn't follow you. Yeah, your 28 followers are gonna make an impact when you retweet. I'm unfollowing you. Thanks. Cool.
Some people, man.
Hey, if you really want to get mad, if you really want to get pissy, Seth Davis gets into anything and everything, and so what? All right, but that's Twitter talk for the show. We mixed it up today, so had some fun. So it's about an hour plus show. We had thanks for Anna Q hopping on with us, talk some San Jose State, Nevada. We have all of our football stuff recaps we did this week. Check our new site, MWR.com. A lot of basketball stuff too. So check out me and Eli doing some hoops podcast down there probably once a week. We'll see. Depends how it goes. But Brandon, you excited for that Nevada Rhode Island game coming up Monday?
Oh yeah, I will be. Barring something bad happening in the distance, I will be recapping that game. I'm in Florida, excellent. So I'll have to be staying up to watch that game.
Hey, at least you're in Central time in Florida, not Eastern time, so that's good.
Yeah, right? But it blurs together. Oh,
it does. I get it. I've been in that time zone before, so.
It blurs together. I mean, really, what's the difference? An hour. Thank you. I set myself up for that. Dang it. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, good times. You know, grab a cup of coffee and enjoy a very good game in which little Nevada basketball real quick. You know, this is going to be a game that is going to be interesting in terms of what happens in March. You know, Ryan's a good team, very good squad, Nevada coming off their victory. So it'll be a good game. People should watch. Not your typical non-conference game.
Yeah, oh, geez, there's some bad ones. Northern New Mexico.
Northern New Mexico.
That's all I got. All right, so thanks for hopping on again for us, joining the show, listening. However you – oh, one quick note. Our podcast is now on Spreaker as well, which is pretty cool. So Blog Talk Radio did some team up with Spreaker. Basically, it's basically like SoundCloud. So if you like SoundCloud, I know Blog Talk Radio, they don't have an app. It still works pretty well on mobile, but if you want a better mobile experience and you don't have iTunes or you don't use Stitcher – go to Spreaker, download their app. It's very, very similar to SoundCloud. I know we're not on SoundCloud over there because we don't get any money on SoundCloud. So that's why we're not over there. Sorry, but it's true. We don't get our 4 cents a month from SoundCloud. So, but if you like Spreaker, go there. We're on TuneIn, everywhere else, Stitcher, Blog Talk Radio, anywhere you can find a podcast, essentially we're at, but now Stitcher. So download that app, please, and subscribe to our show that way. Leave a review. We'd appreciate it as well. And as always, yeah, we're biased against your team. And
good
we
need
this time. Yes, good or bad.